This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. We are back. It is 2017. That's Ken Campbell, our senior writer. This is me talking, Matt Larkin, writer-editor. And we're here with managing editor, boss man, Edward Fraser. This is the Hockey News Podcast. We are back after a holiday hiatus. Although I can call it a hiatus, it wasn't really a hiatus because there was a lot of hockey played. Most of it in our backyard in Toronto, including, of course, the World Junior Championship. And, you know, we had to work. We had to go to the games, or at least Ken did.
I worked. Ken did. I'm on my 10th day in a row without a day off, Matt Larkin.
He's been busting his small ass.
So don't tell me... It's cute, though. Don't tell me that we had a hiatus.
Well, Ken didn't, but the thing is, look at the stands of this tournament. It seems like the crowds are having a hiatus. There's no one there at these games. What the hell's going on?
People are hockeyed out. That's what it is. Especially in the Toronto market, people are hockeyed out. I mean, this has been... we got the World Cup. We got this tournament. It's not just hockey, dude. They're sports out. I mean, everybody thought Toronto was a dead sports market. Suddenly the Raptors are contenders.
The Blue Jays
are contenders. Whatever that soccer team is called are contenders.
Yeah, the one that outshot the other team 3-0 in the final game.
How do you win a championship when you don't have a shot?
Because soccer. As my dad says, the excitement in soccer is when there's almost a shot on goal. Yeah. Oh my goodness, that was almost a chance. Lovely. You know? Brilliant.
I don't.
Anyways.
That's what it is.
Right. Yeah. In 2013, Hockey Canada decided they were going to go back-to-back with Montreal and Toronto for the World Junior Championships. That year, Toronto Blue Jays, last place. Toronto Raptors, last place. TFC, last place and a dysfunctional mess. No Grey Cup, no World Cup, no outdoor game. So I agree that it is fatigue in a way, but I think it's a bigger picture thing than that. I really, really do. And I think this tournament is really running the risk of making itself irrelevant by continuing to go back to Canadian markets, by being lazy, and by having too many teams. I think first thing you do, in my opinion, is you take two teams out of this tournament. First thing you do. Eight-team tournament. It used to be an eight-team tournament with each team playing a round robin, and the team that finished in first place won the championship. I think they have to look at going back to that.
No!
You don't lose any more games. You still have 28 games. And these games, then it makes every game compelling. Every single game compelling.
I couldn't agree with you more about cutting the teams. You need a winner-takes-all final. That's the appetite for sports nowadays. The round robin doesn't fly. You need a matchup. You need a marquee matchup between two teams. I agree with you totally. Cut down the teams. I don't want to see Azerbaijan
playing Chad.
I don't care about
that. I kind of want to see. I could play in that.
Yeah. The Division IV World Juniors were phenomenal.
They probably were.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, because that girl played for the United Arab Emirates, the one that can like stick out like crazy. Yeah. No, but I'm telling you, man, like Denmark and Latvia, I'm pretty sure that almost every Canadian Hockey League team could beat them. I think a couple of really good Junior A teams could beat those teams. They don't belong in this tournament. There's too many teams. There's too many bad teams. There's too many bad games. And it's not the fact that there's no star power in this. It's not the fact that it's Montreal-Toronto. It's the fact that this tournament is fundamentally flawed and has to be fixed.
But there's fatigue. There's definitely fan fatigue. Yep. And it's, I think it's... Yes, it is. I mean, I was right off the top, as always, when I say that the market is saturated. But it's just the fatigue of the tournament in general in the same market.
Yeah.
We just saw this 2 years ago. Take it out west. I don't care.
Especially given ticket prices. If you just shelled out $200 2 years ago, sure, that's a lot of money. Are you going to do it again?
People live in experiences nowadays.
Yeah.
So you experienced Canada playing in the World Juniors 2 years ago.
Yep.
I don't need to experience that again.
Exactly.
You saw Connor McDavid.
How
been
can
there
we
done.
Miss you if you never go away?
Yeah.
That's
exactly
my point.
Right. You're
if
exactly
by 2019,
right.
by the time the tournament's finished in 2019, it will have been played 8 of 11 years in Canadian cities or in Buffalo, which is basically a Canadian city for all intents and purposes when it comes to this tournament. So, I mean...
The World Juniors has become the house band.
Exactly. And it's like the part of the allure of this tournament used to be that Canada would go over to Ostrava or to the Czech Republic or to, or to Russia or whatever, and you'd have no idea. It was like, you had no idea how well they were going to do, and it was kind of a us against the world mentality, and it doesn't exist anymore. I'm convinced the last night, 10,000 people only showed up to that Canada-Slovakia game, or Czech Republic game in the quarterfinal, because they knew Canada was going to win. Unless there was some enormous upset of biblical proportions, Canada was going to win that game. You don't sell things unless there's intrigue to be sold, and there's just so little intrigue in this tournament now.
And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, too. There's a perception that, you know what, North America, especially Canada, cares a lot more about this tournament. The European nations, they care a ton about the World Championship, which we don't really, but they don't care that much about the World Juniors. Well, if you're continuing to take the tournament away from Europe, that's just going to perpetuate the problem.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
total self-fulfilling prophecy.
And now they're talking about putting the Ivan Hlinka in Edmonton, and they're going to ruin that, too. And I just, like, it doesn't always have to be this big spectacle. It's not that. The World Juniors is not that. It shouldn't be that. It shouldn't try to be that.
The number one goal of this tournament, and it's easy to say, should not be about making money.
Right.
And that's the reason it's here, is because, I mean, it's infinitely more popular here than it is in any other country, including the United States. There's a reason they only hold that tournament in border cities.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But, that's not what the IIHF's mandate with this tournament should be. They should be doing what's best for the growth of the game and the growth of this tournament and the growth and development of the kids within.
Yeah.
And I think we've kind of gotten away from that.
And the problem is, tell it to TSN. Right now, TSN, since it lost the NHL rights, this is its number one cash cow in terms of game coverage. It I'm sure it's better for the network if it's in Canada every 2 years.
Yeah, I tried to get the ratings. I haven't gotten them yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's been a dip in those, too.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
Just because the marquee players are missing.
Yeah.
I mean,
who's the star of this tournament? Is it Dylan Strome? I guess.
Yeah.
I guess I
think the star of this tournament plays for Switzerland.
Yeah, well, yeah. And he's a draft eligible. But I mean, he's not a guy... Hischier.
I purposely didn't say his name.
Hischier.
I wanted Ken
Nico
to say it.
Hischier.
I've never said it out loud.
Is not going to be a guy that's going to draw people in because A, he plays for Switzerland, and B, I mean, he's 17 years old. Nobody really knows who he is.
Yeah.
But I watched that game last night. I was at that game last night, and that was phenomenal. That kid is... I don't know how good the other kids are because I'm not as plugged into the draft as I used to be, but boy, oh boy, they're going to have to be pretty good if they want to be better than this guy.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what Ryan Kennedy has to say after one. He's in Montreal right now watching the final games, and obviously watches, as our prospect expert, watches these tournaments really closely. But, I mean, he still had Nolan Patrick at number one in his recent draft rankings, and I'll be interested to see if he switches it up. But the thing is, how do you judge Patrick now?
Right.
Having played a handful of games all season.
Well, even if he had played for Canada, if he played on the fourth line and gotten 8 minutes a game, how do you judge that? The general sort of feeling is that I've gotten over the years of covering this tournament is that a bad tournament, if you're a draft eligible player, a bad tournament doesn't really hurt you. It's not going to be the death knell to your draft hopes, but a really good tournament can really knock the socks off of people.
Yeah.
And that's what Hischier's had. I mean, this kid, he scored in overtime against the Czech Republic, had 2 goals last night, had the game on his stick, you know, had a chance for a hat trick. He was all over the ice. Bob Motzko, the coach of the U.S. team, said, you know, the U.S. has played Canada, Russia already, and he said that Hischier was the best player they faced in this tournament so far. The best player.
Yeah.
Like, and he said the ice was tilted every time he was out there, and it was ridiculous because it was.
Especially playing with not a big supporting cast.
Right.
I mean, he's a standout. I mean, they're leaning on him, but that's an interesting comment that in a tournament that features a guy like Dylan Strome.
Switching over to the NHL now, we just finished the outdoor blitz. We had the Centennial Classic, which had one amazing period, probably the greatest period in outdoor hockey history on Sunday the 1st. Then we had St. Louis hosting the Winter Classic on the 2nd. Where do you guys stand right now on the outdoor game as a whole? I mean, it seems like we're reaching a bit of a saturation point, but do you enjoy the romanticism of these things still, or is the fact that it's typically kind of weak hockey starting to weigh the games down?
Well, I think, first of all, to say it was the greatest period in outdoor hockey history is wrong.
It was!
No, it
seven
wasn't.
Goals!
No, because I played outdoor hockey. I'm
NHL
I
outdoor hockey
I played outdoor
history.
Hockey at Rosemary Playground in Sudbury, Ontario, and we had third periods that were way crazier than that, okay? Like, seriously,
cool
kids,
story,
kids
bro.
Would get stuck, their tongue stuck to the goalpost. It was awesome. Anyways.
Sudbury Sports Hall of Famer, Ken Campbell.
That's true, actually.
That's a true story.
True story. Tell it again, bro. Anyways, no, I think you're right. I think this whole... I think what's happening with the outdoor games is the same thing that's happening with the World Junior Championships, is we're getting too many of these shoved down our throats, and it's the novelty is completely worn off. And, you know, we were there. You were there, Matt. I was there. It was an amazing atmosphere to be in.
Mm-hmm.
In that little bubble that is BMO Field that the NHL arbitrarily changed to Exhibition Stadium.
Of course.
Because it was a
Scotiabank event.
Outdoor game, and they couldn't have a conflict there. But anyways, in that little bubble, it was amazing. It was mind-blowing. It was wonderful. It was great. It was a beautiful celebration of hockey. It was all those things. But I'm not sure that it would have resonated 10 feet outside of that bubble. And I think it's become sort of like what hockey is. It's a great local thing. You know, like, it's a great local thing. If you were in St. Louis, it was a great thing. Mm-hmm. To watch that game on TV, I don't know. I was at the World Juniors yesterday. I didn't see it. But to watch the Toronto-Detroit outdoor game on TV, like, it's great that they had a third period, that great third period and a great overtime. But if I was watching that game, I would have never made it to the third period in overtime.
Right.
Because the first two periods were absolute garbage.
Mm-hmm.
You're bang on, Ken, and I thought it was really interesting what Ken Hitchcock said during one of his intermission interviews or in-game interviews on the NBC broadcast yesterday, and he said exactly what you said was it's a great thing for the market, but I'm not. But he essentially said it's wearing a little thin league-wide.
In terms of mass appeal.
In terms of mass appeal. And that's my issue with these outdoor games. It's not that they're having them, because I do think they're great for the markets. You know, I've heard nothing but rave reviews from people who went to the Toronto game, and I heard from a lot of fans today that they loved the event in St. Louis. The problem is that you shouldn't be using these to sell the game to a mass market. And that's what's happening.
Because the games suck.
The games,
right.
The games are terrible.
Yeah.
They're really bad. And the thing is, I mean, almost all of the NHL's marquee events that get sold to the masses, the hockey is garbage. The hockey is terrible. It's unfortunate. I mean, the outdoor games are a slog. The All-Star game is a joke. And the Stanley Cup final is up and down.
It's a war of attrition.
The drama is great, but the quality of hockey in the Stanley Cup final is often not very good for the best teams in the league because they're worn down.
And you're right about that, because somebody, we talked about that today in our meeting, and somebody mentioned, well, you know, the drama in the Stanley Cup final. And it's true. I mean, there's a lot on the line, but if you don't have a horse in the race, the drama and the intrigue doesn't really resonate that much
in
with
game
you.
Seven it does,
yeah
but
it doesn't
in game
really, but,
two
but
you
want to see, you know, I mean, you want to see Chicago LA from a couple of years ago, the Western Conference final.
Oh,
you want to see that all the time.
That's the best playoff series that I can remember.
Yeah, you want to see that all the time.
It's interesting. It's a great analogy, and especially if you compare it to, say, the NBA. What did the NBA give us on Christmas Day? They gave us Cleveland versus Golden State, LeBron James against Steph Curry. The best of the best. And if you're a layman basketball fan, which I kind of am, and I was at a Christmas party, people tuned in that game and you're seeing elite, the best players in the game, the best teams of the past probably decade going head-to-head. It's the equivalent of if basketball said, you know what, we're going to showcase ourselves. We're going to show a couple random teams, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Chicago Bulls are going to play a game in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And it's going to be played on a street court outside with chain link mesh, and the backboard's going to be sort of misshapen, so you know, the ball's going to bounce kind of funny.
And the
net, final score
the net's
is
going to be ripped a
it's
little
cool.
bit.
67-61 is the final score, and that's your first impression of basketball if you're a layman fan.
It's cool once, but the NHL has now gone back to the world 20 times.
Well, it's 22 now.
Is it 22?
We're at 22. Okay. This, yeah, we've just finished up numbers 21 and 22.
Okay, so that's the well is dry. As it comes to mass marketing it, again, no problem throwing it in the market and saying this is for you and your fans.
I'm getting the sense, boys, too, and I'm just hearing things through the grapevine here, is that Toronto wants to have one of these every year now. And I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's going to happen, but they want to have one of these every
year. But why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
From, from a revenue standpoint?
Exactly. You can put 40,000 people outside.
Sure.
You know, you can double your crowd. Absolutely. Or more than double your crowd. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
But that'll wear thin as well.
Yeah.
That'll wear thin.
Oh, yeah. There'll,
they couldn't even sell out the first one.
No, they didn't. They didn't.
But again,
the day before, there were still 1,000 seats available. And those were the $400 ones that people, I assume, didn't want to pay for.
There was 800 tickets available on a secondhand, popular secondhand market site the night before the game.
And you said for like $80 or something?
For $80, yeah. $80, and you could get a lower bowl seat for $80.
A lower bowl. Yeah.
Now, having never been to one of these, I don't know if that was a better seat. I mean, but still, they were available. And now, I don't know how many of those are, you know, people trying to... but they wouldn't be making a profit on that, from what I understand, to what the ticket prices were.
No.
So,
no.
But again, but even if you sold 75% of it,
yeah,
you're still packing 30,000 people in at 100 to 200 to 400 bucks a pop. So I'm not surprised one bit the Leafs would like to, to hold this every year.
It kind of reminds me of blockbuster movie sequels. It's, you know, artistically, we know it's lame to make Iron Man 7. But people are, you know, it's already established franchise. We'll just crank, one out, and hey, will it make as much money as the first one? No, but will it make a lot of money? Sure, why not? Just keep doing it.
Yeah, and it really was a celebration for a hockey market that's, you know, been kicked in the nuts a lot over the, you know, past 50 years. You know, and I mean, it was amazing.
I was in the
dressing room the day of the alumni game. They had the Argos dressing room in that building, and it was alumni Leaf, like they dressed beside each other, they interacted, they mingled, it was like a great big, and then Babcock had all the alumni guys take part in the meetings, like the video stuff and everything, and it just made everybody feel like, you know, I mean, you got a 19-year-old Austin Matthews and a 91-year-old Johnny Bauer in there, like, how great is that?
Yeah, it's irresistible. You know, it's adorable.
I mean, how great is that?
Leafs are doing it right.
Yeah,
doing it right. Shanahan deserves a ton of credit. Mm-hmm. A ton of credit.
Well, he deserves actually all of the credit. He deserves it all. It's his baby, and he's running with it, and he's doing such an incredible job. No question.
And I've said it before. I keep singling out the anthem singer, Martina Ortiz Luiz, I think is her name.
Yeah, she did the alumni game.
Yeah,
right?
And to me, it sounds funny, but she's a microcosm of what the Leafs have become, because she is phenomenally talented.
Good.
She's first class.
Yeah.
And it shows that every little detail. It's not just the on-ice product. It's even the anthem singer.
Yeah.
Every element of the franchise has been improved, because it's like Shanahan realized, hey, this team is 99 years old, and it's a laughing stock.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous.
That kid has a great set of pipes, too. She can sing. Boy, can she sing. And, you know, I mean, you're right. I mean, now all the alumni get these great jackets that they wear to the games, and it's completely night and day. And I mean, we're getting a little off topic here, but I remember, you know, in the previous regimes, you know, when they would do these things, it would always be the most ham-handed, amateur hour spectacle that you could ever imagine. All I remember was when they closed the gardens. Yeah, I can't remember who it was. They had this great big flag, and somebody was waving it, and the thing just ended, and this guy was just standing there waving this flag, and nobody knew what to do, and it was awful.
Yeah.
And now you do it, and like, look at what Shanahan's done. Like that thing he did on opening night, that was ridiculous, with all the banners and keeping it secret and everything. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, they're doing a good job. And before anybody thinks we're being Toronto-centric, I mean, you know, this is the first time we've had good things to say about the Maple Leafs in many, many moons.
Right. Because
this has been a franchise that's been a laughingstock on and off the ice for quite a while.
And on the ice, there's as much promise for this team as there's been ever. Like, I think more than there's been since the early 70s when Sittler and McDonald and those guys were here. That team that got torn apart, this team's not going to get torn apart.
No doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Switching gears to the rest of the league, because, of course, you know, we're not just the Toronto Hockey News, as the trolls say. We're almost at the halfway point of the season. I think it's a fair time to sort of take stock of our cup picks. We had Tampa Bay at the beginning of the season as the cup champion. Has that changed for you guys, and which team right now is standing out as the team to beat?
For me, I think it's going to be, I think that the final's going to be the same as it was last year, Pittsburgh and San Jose. But the way Pittsburgh turned the tables in 2009 on Detroit, I think San Jose is going to be the team that does that this year. I'm picking San Jose.
Interesting. My pick off the hop, I mean, I always fall in line, so I took the Tampa pick. My pick was Dallas. But I'm ready now truly get on board.
Control-Alt-Delete.
Wait, no, that's it. Ken just gave the command to shut down your computer. It's not.
Okay, sorry.
He meant Select-All-Delete, but...
Apple A. Yes. I'm actually going... I'm getting on Tampa Bay now. I think that they...
Hot take.
I mean, this is a team that has suffered a ton of injuries. When they get people back... When they get somebody for Ben Bishop, who they're going to deal, because Vasilevsky might even be the number one, even when Bishop comes back.
Like he is now.
This is a team that's heating up, and I like the position that they're in. I like their path to get there a lot more than I like any other team's path to get there. I'd love to stick with Dallas because I tried to hammer it home so hard, but... I don't even know if goaltending can fix that defense now. But yeah, I'm on the Tampa Bay bandwagon for sure.
And it's pretty roomy right now, eh? Like you got a lot of legroom on that baby.
We should record this so that we can play it.
If
back.
Only there was a way that we could record this for time immemorial. Oh wait a minute.
All right.
What about you, Matty boy?
Well, I mean, I usually like to stick to my guns when it's convenient for me, but, I mean, right now we're not even totally certain Tampa Bay gets into the playoffs, especially when we don't know how long it's going to be until Steven Stamkos comes back. I just think the Pittsburgh Penguins are top to bottom still the best team in hockey, and I said this last year when they won the Cup. They transformed the way they played under Mike Sullivan, and they peaked so late. They only had half a year to do it that we hadn't even seen them in full swing till almost the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
So they're just really hitting their stride this year, which is why they're so dominant. And the way they play, the way they adhere to that system of just north-south, stretch passes, speed, shots. I think they can sustain this for a couple years. I think they have a real chance to be the first team since 1998 to repeat as Stanley Cup champions.
It's so hard to repeat. Like, it's just, there's so many variables. Like, as good as they are, it's just, it's so hard to continue with that. And you got to remember, Crosby also had the World Cup this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had the time off. He's still the best player in the world.
Anybody notice that Evgeny Malkin's leading the league in scoring right now?
Yep.
Anybody notice that?
Usually he only does
anybody
it when
notice
Crosby's
that
not
Justin,
around.
Justin Schultz gets like a point every game and gets like a goal or an assist every game? Anybody noticing that stuff?
Have we reached the halfway point yet?
Not quite, but close.
It's there's a lot of hockey to be played, and I mean we're projecting out, but it's just so hard to repeat when you've got 10 to 12 teams. Are we up to 12 now? I think we had 8 last year. Now we're up to 12 teams, I think, that can legitimately win a Stanley Cup and not be a surprise.
Yep.
That's tough. That's a tough road to hoe.
The screaming you hear in the distance is Columbus Blue Jacket fans storming the door of this office to yell at us for not picking them. Because we know this is a fiery bunch. If you've seen these guys on Twitter, they get fiery over their team. And it's a good question. How come none of us has selected Columbus as our Stanley Cup pick when they've won 15 games in a row as of this time? And do you think it's finally time to take them seriously? Or do you still think this is just a cute, cuddly story?
Well, see, the problem is that now you've taken away my outrageous prediction for 2017, and that is that the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to suffer a soul-crushing defeat in the first round of the playoffs.
Woo!
If the playoffs were to start today, they'd play Philadelphia.
Hmm.
And, you know, maybe they're going to end up having to play Washington, you know. But I think that Columbus is the perfect example of a team that's really, really good, really well put together, but needs to suffer that soul-crushing defeat.
They, can win. Yeah.
They need to suffer that soul-crushing defeat to figure out what it takes to win. And, I, you know, so that's part of the reason. But, I mean, right now, are they the best team in hockey?
No,
does it bear shit in the woods? Of course.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I mean, they are. I mean, and not because they've won 15 in a row, but they've beaten the Montreal Canadiens twice, like, by big scores. They've, like, crushed They've crushed the New York Rangers.
And they crushed Pittsburgh, too?
Yeah, they crushed Pittsburgh,
Minnesota,
72.
Minnesota coming in with a 12-game winning streak.
Yeah, and
that
was
wasn't
like,
even close.
Yeah, and it was like, yeah. Step aside. Step aside. No, and, like, I mean, you got a fourth line of Sedlak, Hartnell, and Gagne. Man, that's depth. That is depth. Mm-hmm. And Bobrovsky's could be the best goalie in the entire league right now.
Called it.
Oh, yeah, they're for real. They're absolutely for real.
Yeah, but I worry about that as well, that they are... The possibility of first-round fodder is there. And, you know, they don't hand the Stanley Cup out in January.
Right.
And how's that for a cliche?
Get pucks deep.
Whoa. Yeah, you really give 110% on that one, Eddie. Sorry.
Can't grip the sticks too tight.
I gotta get more.
Wow,
I gotta get more. I gotta get more cliches deep.
One game at a time.
But, yeah, a lot can happen in the second half of the season. All the credit in the world to John Tortorella, but what happens when things start going bad? I mean, he's getting all the credit in the world. He's a changed man. What happens when the 3-game losing streak that's bound to happen?
I don't think they're going to lose another game this year. I think they're going to win every game they're on.
And that wasn't your crazy prediction?
Yeah, no. Because it's even crazier that they're going to win every game the rest of this year, then lose in the first round. Like, that's even crazier.
Will they beat 17? Who do they got coming up?
Edmonton. Edmonton's next.
Yeah? Okay.
That's pretty sexy.
That's an easy one.
Yeah. Ooh. See, to me, when it comes to John Tortorella... He's been a popular whipping boy, but I kind of want to back him because you look at this team, there isn't a ton of change from last year. They brought in Sam Gagne, and Zach Werenski made the team. Those are the two biggest changes with this team, but a lot of it's the same, and we know Tortorella, it takes time. His system is so much about fitness and speed and bag skates, and it's almost like, I've said this before, but he's like a military commander. He has to break his troops, and then they buy in. And it's funny because I was talking for a recent issue to Sergei Bobrovsky, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, and one thing he said was the biggest change in the team this year is the room is different. And that's a very strange thing to say when the team is almost exactly the same. How is the room different? And he said, we've all gotten to know Torts a lot better.
Mm.
So I'm starting to believe that he's won them over, and I do agree, just like a good military commander, or you know, the type you see in a movie, the drill sergeant, eventually when you lose the troops you really lose them, but when you have them at least for a window of a few years, I think they're really going to buy in, and I could see this working for, you know, 2 or 3 years until Torts probably flames out again.
Well, and they've also got everything going for them right now. They've been incredibly healthy all year, and they've got some guys having career years. Like Jack Johnson's never going to play better than he's playing now again.
Cam Atkinson.
Yeah, Cam Atkinson. Nick Foligno seems to go good year, bad year. He's on a good year. Sergei Bobrovsky seems to go good year, bad year. And he's on a good year. So there's a real perfect storm that's brewing here for this team. And they could ride that a long way.
Yeah. I just want to say how happy I am for Cam Atkinson seeing a level of success. And this is just a personal thing. When I was really early in my career here, he was one of the first interviews I did. And what a super nice guy. Just a really, really nice guy.
Yeah. And a hardworking guy. And it's one of the smaller guys.
And that's... The guy you wouldn't expect to succeed. Everybody, you know, guy's got to overcome a lot of stuff, but, you know, just a genuinely nice guy as his...
Wasn't he the guy that moved into Ken Hitchcock's old place and jacked his Hockey News subscription? I think he did. Seriously, like, the Hockey News kept coming for Hitchcock.
That's amazing.
And he lived there. I think it was
That's
him.
Fantastic.
And he just kept taking it.
We'll get you a new subscription, Ken.
That's awesome. So we know what Ken's bold prediction is. Do you have one, Mr. Fraser, at this time?
I do have a bold prediction. Anze Kopitar will Kopitar will get more millions of dollars this year than he will goals.
Woo!
Sitting on three.
So and he's making what, 14?
Oh
no,
are you talking salary or are you talking cap hit?
Well, maybe both.
Cap hit's 10 million.
Well, cap hit's
10. Okay.
But he's making.
I thought it was 8. I don't even think he's going to get 8 goals. How ridiculous is that? Like, I don't care. You can be all the greatest 2-way player in the world if you've got 3 goals in 30-odd games. That's problematic.
I'm making a bet with you though. Kopitar, he's done this several years in a row. Second half player. I will bet you, I don't know what
okay,
the wager is,
$5
that Kopitar finishes with over under 14 and a half.
14.
Okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to say 15 or more goals.
Your cap hit is $10 million, and we're talking about 14 goals? That's an embarrassment.
That's okay, so it's a 28-goal pace in the second half.
So okay, I'll come up three. I'll come up with another one. I'll come up with another one. By the time the playoffs start, Henrik Lundqvist will not be the New York Rangers' number one goalie.
Love it. Do you know where he's going to be?
No, he'll be there still. He just isn't going to be the number one goalie.
No, he'll be in Dallas.
That's what I said in the summer. I got crucified for that. I got one that involves a goalie as well. Nashville Predators are going to sneak into the playoffs. They'll get things sorted out. They're going to upset someone as a low seed in the first round. Their starting goaltender will be UC Saros, not Pekarinen.
Wow.
You didn't see that guy play when they were here in Toronto, eh? Whoa.
Have you seen him play
lately?
Have you seen him play lately? He's tiny, though. That's the only problem. Yeah. Okay. It's time for...
Was he a Ranger? Come up with something.
As soon as we get a sponsor.
Maybe I can go Lone Ranger. Was he a Ranger? Was he a Ranger?
All right. Ken came up with the theme song. He gets to go first.
Okay. I'm going to go old school here. The Turk, Derek Sanderson.
Usually I'm pretty good at...
No, okay, you're crappy.
I get it
wrong every time.
No, I get it right every time.
No, you're crappy at it.
I get to deconstruct. Okay, Ken is going to think that we associate Derek Sanderson so much with the Boston Bruins that we cannot picture him in another uniform.
You can't do it this way.
So I'm going to deconstruct this. I'm going to say yes, Derek Sanderson was a Ranger.
Pride, like switching the...
Doesn't matter.
Switching the...
It's genius.
The wine glasses around things.
I watched Princess
Bride. Inconceivable. Yeah, you can't do that. You got to just...
No more rhymes. I mean
that. Okay, so what
anybody
you
want a peanut?
You saying he was?
Yes. I'm saying he was.
Okay.
I'll say yes as well.
You're both right.
Woo!
Fantastic. The Turk played for the New York Rangers in 1974-75 and 75-76 very briefly before... ending his tenure at 8 games, and then things kind of went south for him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think we just got in trouble from the boss, by the way, our editor-in-chief, Jason Kay. He just knocked on the wall. I think we're being too loud right now.
Yeah, somebody's pounding.
We're celebrating Was He a Ranger. So maybe he's on an important call. So we're going to have to move this quickly and wrap it up. Okay, mine is Andre Kovalenko.
Ooh, the Tank.
Didn't know that was his nickname.
I will say...
Jason is coming in during the middle of our podcast. Say hi, Jason.
And he's holding a hockey. He's holding a hockey stick. That was the most stereotypical thing a hockey news boss could ever do. He literally was holding a hockey stick for some reason. Yeah.
No.
The answer is.
Wait! Oh, I haven't guessed yet.
All right.
I'm gonna say yes.
The answer is no.
Oh, good.
A Ranger.
Good one. Good, good. Okay.
You ready?
Eddie boy.
Eric Bolton.
Okay, I'm going to say...
Yes.
I think you're going to think that we associate him with New York because he's been an Islander for a long time. I'm going to say not a Ranger.
I'm going to say a Ranger.
And the winner is...
Holy smokes, Mr. 0 for 2 today.
Have you noticed? I don't think I've ever got one of these wrong. I think I'm Batman when it comes to this
game. What are you talking about? You got a whole bunch of them wrong.
I think I'm batting 1,000.
Eric Bolton, drafted by the Rangers. Played with the Rangers.
Ooh, that's a technicality. So was he?
He's not a Ranger.
What if you're picked in the first round and you slip on the sweater?
No.
Nope.
You got to play.
You got to play for the team. Okay. In a real game,
Eric Lindros a Quebec Nordique?
Yes.
And by extension, then a Colorado Avalanche?
Yes.
And then by extension, I don't know.
No.
I got nothing.
All right, time to go find out why Jason was holding a hockey stick. Thanks for listening, guys. Good to be back. Happy New Year, and we shall return next week.